A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're moving beyond those slick, glossy ads about the future of cities. We're strapping in for a really critical look at the systems that are already reshaping our neighborhoods, the whole idea of the smart city.
Exactly. And our guide for this essential dive is Germaine Halagua's book, Smart Cities: Politics, Power, and Participation. Our mission really is simple. It's to give you a shortcut to understanding that the smart city, well, it's way more than just efficiency and shiny sensors. It's fundamentally a political project.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And it couldn't be more relevant, could it?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, these data platforms, the Internet of Things, predictive algorithms, they're actively changing how urban life is governed. If you live in a city, this tech is likely affecting your commute, maybe your safety, how you access resources. Yep. We really need Halagua's work to give us the tools to actually participate in decisions about our own communities,
yeah,
not just be passive recipients of whatever tech gets rolled out.
And she's absolutely the right person to guide us through this. Germaine Halagua, she's an associate professor, and her work sits right at that intersection of digital media, urban studies, and social geography.
Yeah, what's really unique, I think, is she's not coming at this like an engineer, you know, or a city planner who's just focused on logistics. Her background is more in digital geographies, locative media, basically, how things like GPS, sensors, mobile tech, how they shape our experience of place.
She's looking at smart cities through a critical, you could say, humanistic lens. She's less caught up in, you know, does the sensor work perfectly?
Right.
And more interested in how this technology impacts real lived experience, social justice.
Who benefits?
Who benefits exactly, and who gets marginalized by these huge technological shifts? She does a great job bridging that gap between a really complex tech stuff and the fundamental human concerns.
Okay, so if the smart city isn't just about technical achievement, what's the core argument? What's the main thesis she lays out?
Well, her central argument is pretty clear. The smart city concept itself is powerful, yes, but it's also deeply contested and fundamentally ideological. It's not some neutral description of a place. It's a political claim, really, reflecting specific values, often corporate or governmental ones.
That immediately complicates the usual story we hear, doesn't it? The one that's always focused on optimization, saving money.
Right, the efficiency narrative.
But the corporate view argues that efficiency is the public good. If these systems save the city money on, say, streetlights or reduce traffic, isn't that a win for everyone? How does Halagua push back against that powerful optimization mindset?
She pushes back by clearly defining the central tension. On one side, you've got this dominant, often top-down model. It's heavily promoted by big tech companies like IBM, Cisco. They tend to see the city as this complex machine, something to be managed for maximum operational efficiency using centralized data and control systems.
The ultimate urban control room, kind of.
Exactly. But then, against this, she presents the alternative. These bottom-up, citizen-centric approaches. These models prioritize things like democracy, privacy, equity. They challenge that core assumption that corporate-driven efficiency automatically equals public benefit.
So they ask a different question.
They ask a fundamentally different question. How can the technology serve the community's actual needs rather than forcing the community to adapt to the technology's demands?
So the book is really tackling that big question.
Yeah.
How do we imagine and build urban intelligence that's more inclusive, more democratic, and truly responsive to the diverse needs of people living in cities? The problem, as Halagua sees it, is this huge gap between the sort of utopian promise, you know, technology will save us, and the often messy reality of failed projects and, worse, reinforced social inequalities.
Right. Let's peel back some of those layers then. Starting at the ground level, the physical stuff. If the promise is efficiency, how does the system actually collect the data, the fuel for that efficiency? This brings us to what Halagua calls the foundational layer, urban instrumentation. Yeah, this is basically the Internet of Things, but scaled up to the entire city. We're talking about embedding sensors pretty much everywhere, lampposts, traffic lights, trash cans, buses, turning the whole physical environment into this massive real-time data collection network. You could think of it like the city's nervous system.
And you mentioned earlier this data collection itself is political, not neutral. How so?
It is, inherently. Because the choice of what data to collect, and just as importantly, where you decide to place those sensors, that dictates which problems the city ends up prioritizing.
Okay.
So if you mainly put sensors to monitor traffic flow in wealthier downtown areas, you make those commuters visible, their problems seem solvable through data. But maybe you ignore the unreliable bus routes in an under-resourced neighborhood because there aren't sensors there.
So those issues become invisible to the system.
Exactly. The choices about instrumentation create a hierarchy of visibility, and therefore a hierarchy of whose problems get addressed.
Okay, so all this raw data gets collected, and then it flows up into the brain of the urban operating system. How does that centralized platform, often visualized as an urban dashboard, change how city managers see and tackle urban problems? Does it really give them that kind of God's eye view they might be looking for?
Well, the dashboard, famously pioneered in places like Rio de Janeiro, is designed to be the ultimate integrated control center. And yes, it promises faster responses, smoother governance, integrated decision making. All sounds good.
Sounds efficient.
Sounds very efficient.
Yeah.
But Haligua offers a really vital critique here. She argues it risks reducing the city's incredible complexity, its messy human reality, into just a series of manageable, quantifiable data points on a screen.
It sort of flattens the city into metrics.
Precisely. It privileges what can be easily measured, you know, charts, graphs, key performance indicators over what often truly defines urban life, cultural vibrancy, social interaction, serendipity, the subjective feeling of living somewhere. So managers get this illusion of total control, maybe prioritizing neat optimization over dealing with that inherent human complexity.
And that pursuit of efficiency, as you said, can have really serious consequences, especially when we look at equity. Let's dig into a concrete example where this trade-off becomes really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Public safety and the use of predictive policing algorithms.
This is a classic example, unfortunately, of what she calls technological solutionism kind of falling short. The stated goal is efficiency, right? Identify potential crime hotspots before crimes happen. But the algorithms are trained on historical crime data.
And that data itself might be biased.
Exactly. If that historical data reflects existing systemic biases, like, say, the historical overpolicing of certain neighborhoods or racial groups, then the algorithm doesn't fix the bias. It learns it. It automates it. It can even amplify it.
Creating this perfect and, frankly, kind of terrifying feedback loop.
That's exactly it. The system tells police, patrol these specific areas more heavily. They do, which naturally generates more police reports, more arrests, more data from those specific areas.
Which then feeds back into the algorithm.
Reinforcing its prediction that those are the areas needing heavy policing. It leads to the cycle of heightened surveillance and over-policing, often falling hardest on already marginalized communities.
So it forces us to confront that really difficult question. Even if a system is technically efficient, maybe it reduces costs or response times if it actively reinforces social inequality, is it truly beneficial?
And Haligua's answer is pretty clearly no. The social cost, the cost to justice and equity, often outweighs any perceived administrative gain.
That kind of pushback, that resistance, leads us nicely into the battle for control and some of the really fascinating case studies Haligua explores. On the cautionary sort of top-down side, you mentioned cities built from scratch, like Songdo in South Korea.
Yeah, Songdo is often held up as this model of perfect technological integration. It was literally built around the smart infrastructure from day one. But it's also been widely critiqued, hasn't it, for feeling sterile, lacking spontaneous community life, maybe not being that livable.
Right.
It kind of demonstrated that you can't just algorithmically program a vibrant city. You need people, organic social connections, that unpredictable human element.
But maybe the real turning point, the big headline case, was that corporate versus citizen conflict in Toronto, the canceled Sidewalk Labs Quayside project. Why was that such a watershed moment?
It was huge because this was a major corporate venture, right, proposed by Sidewalk Labs, a Google sister company. The plan was to build this fully integrated, data-saturated smart district right on Toronto's waterfront.
Hmm.
But the public backlash was massive.
And it wasn't just anti-technology, was it?
No, not at all. The core concerns were really about things like corporate surveillance, the potential privatization of public space and public decision-making, and a profound lack of democratic oversight regarding how all that citizen data would be collected, used, and controlled.
So that cancellation was a really powerful, tangible demonstration of citizen power pushing back against that purely technocratic, corporate-driven vision. It showed this stuff isn't inevitable.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the more hopeful counter-narratives, like the approach taken in Barcelona, Spain. They explicitly adopted what they called a citizen-centric model, focusing on technological sovereignty.
What does that mean in practice?
Well, it means prioritizing things like open source software, ensuring public ownership of urban data, not letting it all flow to private companies, and actively using civic technology platforms to enhance democratic participation rather than just monitor people. The focus shifted from measuring citizens to actually empowering them.
Okay, so we've looked at the systems, the sensors, the dashboards, the conflicts. Let's try to synthesize the core themes, the big messages Haligua wants us to take away. Theme one seems to be the politics of technology.
Yes, absolutely central. The idea that these smart city tools, these systems, they are never politically neutral. They always embody the values, the assumptions, the power relations of the people and institutions that create them. So the essential habit we need to cultivate is always asking, whose interests are really being served here? Is it primarily about efficiency and control, perhaps benefiting vendors or administrators? Or is it about genuine equity and participation for residents?
Okay, theme two, rejecting technological solutionism. This is that tempting belief, isn't it, that really complex social, economic, political problems, like poverty, discrimination, lack of housing, can somehow be solved by just deploying the right algorithm or platform.
Exactly. Haligua argues, quite convincingly, I think, that this approach usually just tackles the most visible symptoms. It might create an illusion of progress, making things look cleaner on a dashboard, perhaps, while completely ignoring or even obscuring the deep-rooted socio-political causes of the problem. You simply cannot code your way out of complex human issues.
Right. Theme three touches on how we even perceive our cities, the critical difference between place and space.
This is a really insightful distinction. She warns that smart city tools, with their focus on data and quantification, risk reducing the rich, complex, lived experience of a place full of history, culture, memory, social meaning, into just a simplified, measurable, quantifiable space.
A data set.
Essentially, yes, the city becomes merely a data entity to be optimized. And in that process, the human element, that wonderful, vital urban messiness, can get lost.
And finally, theme four, which feels the most empowering, community wisdom.
Yes. The book makes a powerful case that true urban intelligence, the smartness that actually matters, doesn't primarily emerge from sensors and centralized big data platforms. It emerges from the collective wisdom, the local knowledge, the lived experience of the residents themselves. The most effective, sustainable solutions have to be co-created, built from the bottom up, genuinely leveraging that local expertise.
Haligua's writing is packed with these really challenging, memorable statements that drive these points home. Let's maybe touch on three key ideas or quotes that stand out.
Okay, the first one really sums up the entire debate, I think. Smart cities are not just about technology. They are about power, politics, and the right to the city.
That just completely reframes it, doesn't it? It moves the conversation immediately away from just technical specs and efficiency metrics, straight into the realm of political control. Who gets to define the city's future? Who makes the critical decisions?
Then there's this direct challenge to the very definition of smartness. True urban intelligence emerges from the collective wisdom of residents, not from sensors and algorithms.
That feels like such a crucial validation of human input, of lived experience. It implies that if your sophisticated system doesn't actually account for the day-to-day reality of the people living under it, well, it's not really smart in a meaningful way. It might be automated administration.
And a third one, which really puts the onus on us. The question is not whether cities should be smart, but who gets to define what smart means and who benefits from that definition.
That makes accountability absolutely critical, doesn't it? It suggests that if we, the citizens, can shape the definition, if we can set the terms for how this technology is deployed, then maybe we can actually control the outcomes to serve public good.
So the big question then is, how do we translate this critical framework into practical action? What can the average citizen do?
Well, I think Haligua gives us a really practical checklist. When your local government announces some new smart initiative, maybe it's digitized parking meters, smart streetlights, a new public safety platform, start asking those key questions. Who actually owns the data that's being collected? What are the specific privacy implications for residents? And crucially, how is this project likely to impact our most vulnerable communities? Is it actually solving a problem that the community itself prioritizes, or is it solving a problem that's only visible or important to the technology vendor or the city administration?
Asking whose problem is being solved is fundamental. And For policymakers, for urban professionals reading this, the book is basically a mandate to demand thorough social impact assessments before greenlighting these projects. It strongly encourages a problem-first approach. Understand the community need first, rather than just adopting the latest shiny technology because it's available, and demanding public benefit and real democratic oversight, especially in those public-private partnerships.
And for the tech professionals themselves, the engineers, the designers, it's a powerful call to embrace what's known as value-sensitive design. That means consciously building fairness, privacy, accountability right into the system architecture from the very beginning, not treating them as annoying bugs or afterthoughts to be patched later.
Reflecting on it all, I think for me the most valuable takeaway is this fundamental realization that the future shape of our cities, our urban environment, it's a collective social and political choice we have to make. It's not some predetermined technological destiny. The truly smartest cities won't necessarily be the most technologically advanced, but the ones that are the most just, most equitable, and the most genuinely democratically responsive to their people.
Yeah, what really stuck with me was learning more about the power dynamics, particularly the significance of that resistance movement in Toronto. It wasn't just some local MBY issue. It felt like a global demonstration that ordinary citizens can successfully challenge and even defeat that dominant, often corporate-driven narrative of technological inevitability. It really proves that the future of the city is still very much up for grabs, and we as residents have a decisive role to play in shaping it.
The technology is powerful, no doubt. But who governs its use? Who sets the rules? That remains the crucial political question that Halagua leaves us wrestling with.
So maybe the final thought we can leave you with is this. In an era where data undeniably equates to power, how do we actively work to ensure that the immense power generated by data collected about our communities actually serves community empowerment and the public good, rather than simply being hoarded for corporate profit or centralized administrative control? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.